Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Alien Talk Podcast. This is the show where we discuss all things about aliens and UFOs, and as always, where we push the limits of our understanding. We are Joe and Lori, here with you again to embark on another topic from the annals of extraterrestrial lore, so as to attempt to seek the truth and find the facts. Lately, we've been getting into stories of specific events in which there is a sighting of some kind. Some unidentified or unexplained apparition, occurrence, encounter, said to have been witnessed by multiple people at the same time. There was the Virginia, Brazil incident, the one in Rua, Zimbabwe, and in Westall, Australia. These are just a few that are documented in which entire communities have seemingly experienced contact with alien entities. So, Lori, when we covered these incidents, we found that most of the reporting was done on a pretty local level, often in rural areas, like we find with many of the stories about this kind of thing, in which there are aliens or some other kind of paranormal activity. What if there was one that was documented and that it suggested it happened at the national level? What if instead of it being in a remote corner of the world, it involved the federal government and the Department of Defense? How would an encounter like that be handled?
Well, Joe, for one, we know there would be a ton of cover-up and secrecy. The narrative provided to the public about such an incident would be greatly altered from the truth. We know that. Facts and evidence would be suppressed or made to disappear. And there would be an official talking point from which, you know, there would be no deviation from. And we also know that the government would propagandize to their advantage, maintaining both political power and national security, you know, make the enemy wonder and fret that we might possibly have something that they do not. So a more important question is, if someone like a top Pentagon official or someone even higher has such an experience, what action would be taken in direct response to it? You know, would they attack it? Would they capture and conceal it? Would they utilize it in some way? Well, as it is, there is such a story, and the top officials who had this encounter include none other than President of the United States. And it is known as Valiant Thor, or I should say the name of the ET is Valiant Thor, not to be confused with the rock band Valiant Thor with two R's. But the contact supposedly happened right in the White House, and he is rumored by some people out there to have come from the planet Venus, along with two others, on March the 16th of 1957 in a 300-foot-long spaceship that landed in Alexandria, Virginia, where they had an encounter with two local police officers, I guess who witnessed them landing, and who eventually escorted them straight to the Pentagon. So it is said that Valiant Thor insisted on meeting with the president, and naturally they accommodated him. It is also said by some ufologists and conspiracy theorists too that, you know, Valiant Thor was able to provide the U.S. leaders with special resources needed to help advance our technology, and was pretty much directly responsible for getting Americans ahead in the space race with the Soviet Union.
Yeah, and what we know about this character, this alien character, Valiant Thor, it comes from a book written by a guy named Dr. Frank Stranges in 1967. It's titled Stranger in the Pentagon. And a movie with the same title came out in 2013 that was based on that book. So on the surface of this story, and I'm sure others are thinking the same way, I'm very much inclined to reject it outright. There is so much about the narrative that is full of holes, right? And as it is, we know it is the source material for some fictional stories that have used this very same idea. One that sticks out prominently is The Day the Earth Stood Still, a classic black and white sci-fi film from 1951. And the theme is that extraterrestrials are deeply concerned about humanity not living peacefully, and they come here in an attempt to intervene and help. But this story of Valiant Thor has made its way into urban legend from the time that Project Blue Book was going on, and there are some aspects of it that are worth considering. So the story goes that these cops in Alexandria, Virginia, which is a pretty populated area outside of D.C. It's not some place way out in the sticks. And they responded to an incident in which a large UFO lands in the daylight hours of the morning. It lands safely. It doesn't crash like the one in Roswell. And a door opens while the two officers are said to have drawn their guns as they didn't know what was going to come out of it. And what came out of it, out of the spacecraft, out of the object, is a man, a normal-looking Caucasian man who walks normally and speaks perfect English with an American accent and was dressed in like a shiny gold and silver jumpsuit. And he greets the two cops in a friendly tone and a wave of the hand and requests to speak with the president at once. So he is taken away with them in their patrol car, and then the police department calls over to the Pentagon and goes through the office of the U.S. Navy commander at the Pentagon named Harley Andrew Byrd.
Yeah, right. When you said wave of the hand, it's almost like he used a Jedi mind trick or something on them.
I think he was just waving.
But now this guy, Harley Byrd, is supposedly the nephew of none other than Admiral Byrd, the famous explorer who reached both the North and South Poles, who at this time would have already passed away. But not only is he a naval officer at the Pentagon, he is part of Blue Book and is deeply involved with UFO investigations. He, the chiefs of staff and the Secretary of Defense, Charles Wilson, at the time, meet up with the human-looking alien who is tall with brown hair. And like you said, he was wearing some kind of silver and gold jumpsuit. And I guess you can say he would have resembled Elvis. I don't know. Other than that, I mean, he did look normal, but this jumpsuit he had on was anything but normal. I mean, later on, it was taken to a nearby military laboratory to be tested and was found to be indestructible. Like gunshots, they threw acid on it, they torched it with flames, blades, drill bits, nothing even left the slightest mark on it. And oddly enough, it was very thin and lightweight. It's almost like that material that they described in the, you know, Roswell crash. And yet this material kept the body at an optimal temperature. You know, it was never too hot. It wasn't too cold. The material of which it was composed of was never identified, and it was nicknamed the Miracle Garment. And it was clothing that gave absolute perfect protection.
Yeah, and so he gets changed out of that and into regular business attire and is secretly taken to the White House to meet with then-President Dwight Eisenhower and then-Vice President Richard Nixon. So now the ET looks pretty much like a completely regular person. This is when he gives his name of Valiant Thor, or just Val for short. And when asked where he is from, he says from the place that our Bible calls the Morning Star. And the president tries to clarify by asking him if he is referring to the planet Venus. And he says, yes, Venus, the world in the solar system closest to ours and a place that is completely uninhabitable to any life form. It is 900 degrees Fahrenheit there. And it has an atmosphere of sulfur dioxide. As of yet, nothing has been found to be living on Venus. Now, remember, Valiant Thor came with two other aliens, yet very little, if anything, is said about them. But he has a serious and informative conversation with the president. So, old Ike is intrigued by the Liberace kind of fellow and wishes to know what it is that he wants. Why is he here? And that's when Val explains that there is a High Council, a sort of federation of alien planets that is seriously concerned about humans having developed and proliferated nuclear weapons. And he goes on to say that we have been watched by them for thousands of years and that he can be of assistance in helping us with the problems that we're having with war on this planet. So the president and his staff, they take Val up on that and request that he stay in the White House or somewhere close by, maybe the Pentagon, but also asked that he join them on a meeting, a gathering at a large estate in Highbridge, New Jersey, that belonged to someone named Howard Menger. And there they discuss ways to end hunger, disease, pollution, and warfare. And Val proclaims that in order for this to be achieved, there must be a total disarmament of nuclear weapons everywhere in the world. They, that being the humans, said that this is too drastic. And, well, it just ain't going to happen, Mr. Alien Man.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, if one country does it, they all have to do it. And we just don't trust one another. So the U.S. could give up their nuclear weapons, but then Russia won't give up all of theirs, and North Korea and, you know, China. And so it all comes down to trust, I guess, right? But now some of you out there are already giving a chuckle and probably saying, yeah, right. Seeing UFOs and UAPs is one thing, but saying three ETs were met by cops and escorted straight to military headquarters in the White House is in a completely different ball of wax altogether. And you have every right to be skeptical about this. But like you said, Joe, there are aspects to this story that are worth some consideration, like some things that exhibit strange coincidences and correlations with other told accounts. And take this meeting in New Jersey where Eisenhower takes Valiant to meet with top-level researchers. And this may actually be a clue to another ufology mystery, and that is the existence of the Majestic 12. Now, could those guys Val met with be the ever-shadowy group that is believed to be the secret advisors set up by President Truman, Eisenhower's predecessor, about the alien activity on Earth? Now, oddly enough, photographs were taken at this meeting, some in color and some in black and white, and they were eventually leaked. It shows Valiant Thor and the other two ETs at an outdoor gathering, and it's found out that the others, the names of these other two aliens is Don, with two N's, like D-O-N-N, and Jill, like Jack and Jill. Again, they look like regular people, like two Caucasian males and one Caucasian female, who were dressed in the clothing of the time. But if this picture is one of a bunch of special government agents and officials, and it was never supposed to be seen by the public, then it may be showing what could be photographic proof of the MJ-12 altogether, you know, at somebody's house.
Or maybe even just people who were part of Blue Book or the CIA. And no one seems to stand out as being recognizable in the pictures. This could be a picture of anything. No one has come forward to say that they are the ones who are in it, or that they were there. Likewise, there are other photographs that are out there taken of individuals said to be Valiant Thor. And in these photographs, he looks different than in the ones of taken at Highbridge, New Jersey. It does not look like the same person, so obviously his identity cannot be confirmed. And no one can say who the others are in that group. So it is sketchy. But there is something to this illusion made about a planetary or galactic federation. It has been brought up before, and we've heard about it in recent years, like by the former Canadian defense minister, Peter Hellyer, and a former Israeli space director, Hayam Hashed. And of course, the World Council, we hear that word, it refers to alien races, and that's been conflated through literary analysis to be comparable to the Council of Gods. We've heard that before, particularly with the number of them being 12, a council of 12, as in the Olympians, the apostles, the Zodiac. And we've talked about that before to quite an extent.
Yeah. And something about the MJ-12, which we never, when we talked about the MJ-12 before, when we did an entire episode on them, I don't think we brought this up, but there is a 24-page memorandum that was provided to the Dallas FBI field office in 1988, and this was written 35 years prior to 1998, in which all the names are listed of the people who were part of the Majestic 12. And it also affirmed the existence of Project Blue Book, Grudge, and Sign. It even talked about the death of an MJ-12 member and how he was replaced by another member. And it mentioned Kenneth Arnold and his sightings of the disc-shaped objects skipping across the sky, and where the term, you know, flying saucer was coined. However, the document had the word bogus printed in black marker across the pages that detailed those parts. The problem with the word bogus being written on these pages is there is no chain of custody as to show which agent or agents had reviewed the memorandum to determine it was somehow fake. I think, though, that they did have an agent's name redacted, had some marker crossed out over his name, but who is saying it is, you know, this agent is saying it is fake or bogus, and more importantly, you know, why would he put that on there? And if it is bogus, why was it in the FBI's position for so many years? Why not just shred it if it is legitimately determined as invalid? And the reason I'm bringing that up now is to show how sneaky our government can be when it comes to disclosing things. So you can review this 24-page document for yourselves on the FBI website at vault.fbi.gov/majestic12.
Yeah, these classified documents need to show some kind of chain of custody, who had them and whose possession, and who did redact or, you know, amend something. There has to be a pretty good quality control process, usually forms that go along with where the documents are kept in a library or a vault or something, so that they know that somebody just doesn't walk in and grab it and take it and do something to it and put it back. It's like evidence. You have to have, you know, proof of who had it at any given time, and that there's an accountability for where it is. And that seems to be lacking with this memorandum here. It seems like it could have just come from anywhere and gone anywhere. And somebody went ahead and just slapped the word bogus on all the pages because it was released to the public forum under a FOIA request, so that there would be plenty of plausible deniability if any questions were to be raised or ufologists were to start probing into the names and backgrounds of those individuals mentioned in the memorandum. And the official position on it is right there. The document has been deemed as bogus, and therefore whatever it says is inveritable. But, you know, it was after this gathering in High Bridge, New Jersey, that the account of Valiant Thor started to take a rather bizarre turn. And it is then that Frank Stranges, the author of the work that documents this whole account, that's when he enters the scene.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hi, and welcome to Hiss and Tell, a cat podcast where we delve deep into the fascinating world of feline behavior with your host, me, Christina Wilson, a professional animal behaviorist. Each episode features insightful discussions with leading veterinarians, dedicated researchers and scientists, experts in cat behavior and training, and so much more. Join me as we decode the complexities of pet loss, unravel the mysteries of feline health and behavior, and discover the latest research findings. I'll meet you at Hiss and Tell.
Right. And just to add to the whole bogus written across the pages, there was actual information in there about the three projects, the Blue Book, Grudge, and Sign. And that was determined later on to be true. Like these projects actually did exist, and it had the word bogus. Whoever wrote the word bogus wrote that across the page, even with that on there. But what you're saying about Frank Stranges, he was a Christian theologian and he was an evangelist. And I think he died in like late 2000 or early 2000, 2008, maybe.
2008, yeah.
Yeah, 2008. And it is he who is chosen by, for some reason, Valiant Thor chooses him to help spread the message of peace and disarmament because he was intelligent and open-minded. So as it was, someone at that meeting in New Jersey reached out to Stranges and told him about the secret photographs of Valiant, which he talked about in some of his sermons. Eventually, he was introduced to Valiant Thor by someone from the Pentagon. And when Stranges was brought into the room where he was, Val graciously shook his hands and said, "Hello, Frank." It's like he already seemed to know everything about Stranges and his life. It is at this point that Val tells him that he needs his help. So obviously Stranges is amazed by this and asks Valiant, you know, why me? So Val says it is because he is open-minded and an evangelist who tells masses of people about the gospel of Jesus Christ. So, I mean, was Valiant Thor a Christian? an alien Christian? I don't know. And but not only that, Stranges was a big time ufologist, and he was a proponent of the ancient astronaut theory. And he claimed to believe that Jesus of Nazareth and all the angels and the demons were actually extraterrestrials, that, incredible spectacles of them found in the Bible descriptions are of UFOs. And keep in mind that this was before Eric Von Daniken published his initial work, which and Zachariah Sitchin, and his initial work, as we know it, is what got the whole subject in the forefront of contemporary discussions about this.
Yes, so Valiant Thor's mission, it does seem like he is Christian, because he's telling Stranges that he is interested in spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ, and that is what Stranges, that's his career. So Valiant Thor's mission is, to help the human race by showing it the way to return to God, and in doing so, to share it with it the knowledge of all of the wonders of the cosmos. Now, Frank Strange's career of preaching sermons and proselytizing to people seemed to make him a good fit for this, and he is said to have worked with Val for 3 years, interestingly, the same amount of time attributed to the ministry of Jesus of Nazareth. Right. While Strange's is with Val, he is told that there are countless planets throughout the universe that have intelligent life on them. And he even takes Strange's to see his spaceship that is called Victor 1, the one that took them on. This took him on quite a journey. As you see, the ship wasn't anywhere in Washington, D.C., but instead it was hidden down in Mexico. So first, Strange's flies to San Diego, where he meets up with Val, and then they drive to Mexico to San Felipe. That's a good 1,000-mile haul driving through Mexico. And there they go off a beaten path to a secluded part of the beach. And this is where Stranges sees a 300-foot disc-shaped craft hovering above the water. And Val even takes him on board and shows him around. And Stranges described it as the most tranquil and enlightening experience he ever had. Now, this was in 1968, a year after he had already published his book. But he mentioned this in some of his later lectures. So even after Val's mission with Frank Strange's is over in 1960, they are still in touch for many years after that. And supposedly the ship has since been moved to a remote spot somewhere off of Lake Mead in Nevada. And it is rumored that thousands of people living in that area are aware of it being there.
Yeah, so one of the things that Valiant Thor shares with Frank Stranges is that his home world of Venus is inhabited. But no one on Earth knows that, because his race resides in cities that are under the surface. So that is how they are said to be able to survive the harsh environment. And he actually tells him that on most worlds, the inhabitants, they all live underground, Mars being one of them as well. And this, of course, sounds like a reference found in the Book of Enki of how the Martian dwellers made underground facilities after the cataclysmic events that devastated the planet during the time of the Anunnaki, which was somewhere between 5,000 to 10,000 years ago. In fact, Vel even said that Earth life is unique in that it thrives on the surface and not under it like on most other planets. Interesting.
Yeah, and we try to be careful not to spiral into any kind of conspiracy theory here on this show. We always want to follow the facts as they are known to us at this point in time. And sometimes we don't have established facts about a particular idea. What we have is hypothesis, and some hypotheses are better than others. There are those pieces of information that suggest aliens may have bases, under the surface, whether it be on Mars or Venus, the moon, or even under our oceans. It is not evident. There is no proof. Could it be that one day it'll be found or discovered? It definitely could, ipso facto. Right now, such a concept is not supported or justified through reasonable deduction. We speculate as far as the evidence allows us to go by way of any logical analysis.
Right. Now, it should be noted that there is another narrative that has been floating around. And based on an article, What Happened to Valiant Thor, on Indante.com, dated October 31st, 2023, he was quickly taken to Andrews Air Force Base in Maryland, and he stayed there for 3 years, more or less confined. And he tried to get the Eisenhower administration to set up an opportunity for him to address the UN General Assembly and talk to all the world leaders. And they almost allowed it until the CIA stepped in to block it, fearing it could threaten the American military posture in the Cold War. Now, remember, Valiant Thor didn't look like an alien, and if the whole world saw his physical body, it could make our adversaries raise, our advisories raise doubt or even ridicule about our superiority. As to where he went afterwards, it's unknown. He possibly went back to his home world and his ship, and any trace of him is completely gone. And there are others who think the Valiant Thor is now at Area 51, where he is as good as being disappeared, but is deeply involved in the reverse engineering projects. Without any way to verify these stories, his whereabouts is anybody's guess. However, you find books online that are published about him, and but then that goes into these conspiracy theories now of who he was, where he went, and whatnot. And I mean, is it just like the U.S. government and the CIA to just step in a block and use this fear, that it could threaten the American military posture?
Yeah, supposedly you can actually find books by Valiant Thor from Amazon right now. I mean, he writes books. So the whole story about Valiant Thor, particularly as told by Frank Strange's, it gets very problematic. And according to Brian Dunning with Skeptoid.com, dated May 14th, 2019, the good doctor is not considered to be a credible individual as much as what he has claimed on record about himself. It does not check out. He said that he has two doctorates, right? One in psychology and one in philosophy, both from Faith Theological Seminary in Florida. And while that is a real school, it does not offer PhDs in those fields. And later in his life, he went on to say that he had a third doctorate, this one in criminology, from a place called the National Institute of Criminology in Washington, D.C. However, there is no such place. There are a few by that name in Europe, but they do not offer PhDs in criminology. And another oddity about the book Stranger at the Pentagon is that it was published in 1967, 10 years after Strange has said he met Valiant Thor. And you have to wonder why he waited so long to write about him. He did write other books and talked a lot about UFOs and alien life within that time, but never mentioned Valiant Thor. And we have to remember that he was an evangelist, and he believed that the theme of ETs being here on Earth, both in the past and the present, was a way to deliver the gospel of Jesus. And indeed, this notion fits well within the ancient alien theory, right? We've been saying that here for quite some time. But it doesn't take long to realize that the whole story he used for his book is one that has already been told. It's actually almost perfectly mirrors the alien Kalatu and the day the Earth stood still. And in some ways, the main character, Valentine, and Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land. So again, his aim at writing a book about Valiant Thor was to bring people to God.
Well, to this day, no one knows who or what Valiant Thor is, and there is virtually no corroborating evidence for Frank Strange's account. But there is another person who is said to have met Valiant Thor, not in the 50s or 60s, but more like in the 70s and 80s. And we've brought him up before as one who said he witnessed a battle between the U.S. military and aliens out near Dulce, New Mexico. And that guy is Phil Snyder, the engineer who claims he was involved in the construction of an underground base. In addition to saying that there is extraterrestrial hardware all over the Earth, he also said that he had seen and spoken with Valiant Thor. But now his description of Valiant Thor, his physical appearance is a little different than what Frank Strange and Harley Byrd had described. So to Snyder, he was very fair-complected, like very tall and slender, and he had blonde hair and communicated more through telepathy. So he was more like a Nordic, a Palladian. However, he carried the same message of goodwill and genuine concern for Earth's calamities.
Yeah, and also Harley Byrd, his version doesn't hold up too well under scrutiny either. He was on Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell back in the day, back in, I believe it was 1995. And the interview he had with Harley started to take some weird turns, and in which Harley was not able to verify or corroborate anything he was saying. He was pretty much caught in giving false information about his life and his Navy career and his relation to his uncle, Admiral Byrd. Nothing he was saying was adding up, and Art was finding that out in the interview on the radio. And this was in particular with regard to his age in 1957, when he would have met Valiant Thor, as that time frame that he was saying wasn't jiving with what he was saying as being a kid nephew to Admiral Byrd. The times just didn't add up. So this was caught on the interview on Coast to Coast AM. So this obviously raises some doubt to the overall truthfulness of the account about Valiant Thor.
And also, Laura Eisenhower, the great-granddaughter of the late president, Dwight Eisenhower, has claimed to have met Valiant Thor. However, her statements are almost identical to the ones made by Frank Strange's and Harley Byrd, so it's almost like she is merely repeating what she had already heard from them. So unfortunately, there are some credibility issues with those who say they met Val. But that is not to say that the whole thing was a complete 100% fabrication. And we've pointed out a few times how this period of the 1950s and 60s was marked by technological advances the world has never before seen. Now, NASA was founded just 18 months after the date that Valiant Thor was introduced to the Eisenhower administration, and the American jump into space travel and engineering hyper achievement was well underway. And we have to ask if there could be a correlation between the two. And perhaps, but it may be just as sensible to assume that such an innovation innovative pivoting point happened because of the recovery of the Roswell spacecraft just 10 years prior to this. And we said before that that transition happened overnight. I mean, not in a literal sense, but through the 1950s, decade, the U.S. military goes through rapid transitions, not only because of Roswell, but because of Operation Paperclip that brought over German scientists from post-World II Europe, guys like, you know, Wernher von Braun.
Right. And we see that there were many other factors and players that contributed to all of that. So we have to ask if there would be some kind of connection between the narratives about alien technology and alien bodies being kept at military installations and with what the intelligence community was propagandizing through their own channels as part of the normal sort of psyops that was taking place during the Cold War. Is that where the tale of Valiant Thor really originates? Now, while much of the whole narrative does seem far-fetched and even a little bit preposterous, there is a certain detail that is uncannily telling, at least I think so. And that is the content from Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address given in 1961, just before John F. Kennedy was inaugurated. This speech has been given a lot of scrutiny over the years, as it seems to have been a message for the ages. It is a warning about the military-industrial complex. This was only 1 year after Valiant Thor's mission is said to have ended, and this speech given by the president seems to echo Val's very words about the dangers of weapons proliferation that could cause a disastrous economic imbalance in the world. So this seemed to be like a 180-degree turnaround for Eisenhower, whose entire life and his entire career was centered on the understanding of absolute military might so as to win wars. And here he is warning the powers in Washington about risks of the U.S. becoming too powerful and too rich from the profit building of weapons research and development for the armed forces. And this happens, you know, during the height of the Cold War and with the Americans still behind the Russians in space technology. So Ike got some criticism from the Pentagon, the CIA, and Congress for suggesting that we should somehow slow down our military proliferation in the face of nuclear threat. So we have to ask, why did he have such a quick change of heart right at the very end of his presidency?
Yeah, right. Well, added to that is this idea of a council or a federation. President Ronald Reagan even hinted at that in his 1985 meeting with Mikhail Gorbachev in Geneva by saying that the Americans and Soviets would put aside their, differences, their petty differences, and fully cooperate with each other if there was ever an alien invasion or an alien threat. Now, of course, we're all familiar with the Federation of Planets, like what is mentioned in Star Trek, right? In that worldview, there are no more wars. Humans have put aside their petty differences and joined together to reach the stars, Ad Astra. But we have to take everything into consideration before we make a conclusion. And one of the things is that important people, world leaders and top officials have openly described it.
Well, Chaim Ashed, who I brought up earlier, he was once the chief of space security, and he had that position for 28 years over in Israel. And he stated publicly that the U.S. government has been in contact with extraterrestrials for 70 years, going back to the 1950s and the 1940s. And that there was a program in place to assist humans in becoming a spacefaring civilization. However, he also said that then that they will not reveal who they are to the world, that being the alien races. Pity to that. And as it is, 70 years ago, that was a time when a lot of these things were happening. The 1950s is just loaded with all kinds of narratives concerning UFOs and military strategic projection and space technology. So could Valiant Thor have been part of it? Probably. Was he an alien? Probably not. Something about this whole story tells me no.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because Eric Davis, an American physicist, said publicly that they have technology that was not of this earth, not made by human hands. This, along with other notes jotted down on papers where Eric Davis and two other scientists talked about having a program where they were trying to exploit the technology from an intact craft that could fly, and that it was impossible for it to have come from another country. And this was all stated publicly as part of that the Pentagon's UAP task force meeting. Luis Elizondo was also there, and others. And there's like 364 pages of this meeting that, I'm currently trying to read over right now. Maybe we'll do an episode on that meeting soon.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I will say about all this, for whatever it's worth, is that Frank Strange's never recanted anything in his book, never up to his the time of his death, nor has he ever deviated from the specific details. And they do get very specific. He gets into, the conversations he had with Bao. He never deviates from that. And while none of this has ever been verified, it has also never been conclusively debunked. So, like always, you, the audience, must decide. Is there enough preponderance of evidence to support the belief that Valiant Thor was an actual ET? Yeah. Let's just say I wouldn't blame someone for thinking no.
Right. Well, that's what the whole mystery about it. So
that's why we're here to talk about
it. That's why we're here to talk about it. Yeah. So, but anyway, great discussion, Joe, as always. And, so just a friendly reminder to everyone out there that our novel was, available, Battle Planet AD, Relic of the Gods. Check it out at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And we hope you, pick up a copy and, let us know your thoughts on it.
Yes. Also, please keep visiting our Facebook page and our website for future information about upcoming shows. We also have a monthly newsletter where we put a blog on our website, talk about the topics that we're going over and ones that are coming up for this later in this year and things like that. So until next time, everyone, stay safe and stay curious.